Welcome back to another episode of Is Fitz Happy? I'm Luke.
And I'm Emma.
This week we're discussing chapter 32, The Storm.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes, we've had the calm and now we have the storm. And it's aptly named. There's a lot of things that happen in this chapter.
A lot of borderline bad things that happen in this chapter.
And we are starting in Malta's point of view.
Yes. And I think this is one of the few times where we get a chronological following of the previous chapter that not much time has passed, maybe an hour, probably not even that much time.
Yeah.
And we don't usually get that, I feel like, in chapters. Usually we're starting a chapter by going back in time to figure out what's happened. But this time we're starting off with Kefria coming to chastise Malta and Dello for sneaking off, and they need to go prepare to be presented, which
right.
Last chapter ended with Dello and Malta walking around their last time before being women officially.
They've caught up on all sorts of gossip, and they've had all sorts of childish conversations about whose dress is the best, et cetera, what boys are cute, all that sort of thing. Road Karen was as dark and dangerous as ever. Dello had nearly swooned at the sight of him, but oddly enough, Malta had caught herself thinking that his shoulders were not nearly as wide as Rain's. People from the Rainwild traders are starting to mingle in. You can see the veils and the hoods. And Malta's looking all over for Rain, but does not see him. He has not arrived yet. And so she is getting a little worried. And Dello asks, like, oh, how will you ever recognize him? And and Malta sighs, oh, I shall know him. I never fear. My heart always leaps at the sight of him. And she prefaces that with saying, in a line worthy of the girl she had been last year, she says that. And both Dello and her kind of break down and giggles after she says that, after a pause. So the awkwardness of the spring between them has been forgotten. They are friends once again, and Malta walks away very happy and wondering why she ever wanted to grow up.
Right. This was just really refreshing. It was nice to talk with Dello. There's mention that Dello assures Malta that her dress is the finest fabric that can't even be sold anymore, so she looks great. And Malta assures Dello that she does not have fat ankles, and even if she did, nobody will see them anyway. So just a really cute moment between Dello and Malta that explains why they were friends, I think, because for most of this series, we haven't really seen, I guess, Malta like Dello, it feels like. Maybe right. That's just a me opinion, but obviously they got along enough where Dello is helping her sneak out to meet Serwin earlier in the books.
Yeah.
But I think this is a really good snapshot of their friendship where they're both being friendly.
Yeah. So they are walked away from each other. They're getting ready to be presented. They draw lots, apparently, and Malta just so happens to be the last to be presented. So she's waiting while all of these other girls are getting introduced and walking out from behind, like, a veil, a curtain area.
Yes, down the stairs. And as she's worrying, her mother makes the comment that Rain has still not come. Do you want me to tell Davod to take the first dance with you? Malta looked at her mother in horror, but to her shock, Kefria grinned wickedly. I thought that might remind you that there are worse things than having to stand alone during the first dance of your formal presentation. So, the mood is pretty cheery, I'd say.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that Kefria is trying to calm her daughter down with a joke. It's really cute, little touching moment. Malta shocked with horror the thought of Davod dancing with her.
Malta says, I shall wait it out and think of Papa. Her mother's eyes shimmered suddenly with tears, and then Kefria was tugging at the neck of her gown, saying, now be calm, keep your head up, mind your skirts, and oh, it's your turn now. The last words came out as a half-sob. Malta was suddenly blinking away tears of her own. Half-blinded by them, she stepped from behind the screen to take her place in the circle of torchlight at the top of the stairs. Malta Vestrit, the daughter of Kyle Haven and Kefria Vestrit, is presented now to the Bingtown traders and the Rainwild traders. Malta Vestrit. For a moment, she was angered because they named her by her trader name. Did they not think that her father was good enough for their company? Then she accepted it as the Bingtown way. She would do him proud. He might not be here to extend an arm to her and descend the steps with her, but she would walk as his daughter. Head up, eyes cast down, she sank in a slow curtsy to the assembled folk. As she came back up, she lifted her eyes. For a moment, the people seemed far too numerous, the stairs too many and too steep. She thought she might faint and go tumbling down them. Then she took a deeper breath and began her slow descent to the floor. So it's a nice little moment. She has her moment to shine. It's without her father.
Yes, she is taking center stage. She talks about how in this moment, she both wishes it would last forever and is also kind of ready for it to be over. It's a lot of pressure. It's very, it feels written well enough. I feel the joy with her, the anxieties of, oh no, you're going to be presented and now it's happening and all of a sudden it's over.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really interesting that she is upset about not being called Haven or Malta Haven, because that's just not the way of the traders, I guess.
They take the old trader name, I think.
Yeah. And if I'm being honest, I feel like Kyle would take the Vestrit name if he was allowed to, just because then it's an old trader name and it has way more sway than Haven does.
Yeah, maybe.
But maybe that's being, I don't know, maybe I'm just salty. I don't know.
She reaches the semicircle that's on the ground level there of all of the fathers and their daughters, and is looking around at all the Bingtown and Raidwild folk who have had a hard time this past year, and they're not as prosperous as they once was, but everyone is dressed in their best clothes and they're all applauding and looking very nice and they're carrying themselves proudly. She still did not see Rain.
And she's really nervous now because at this point, she was the last one to go. Any moment now, the music is going to start up and all the girls are going to get a dance with their father. And because Rain's not there, she won't get to dance. And she is being kind of self-pitying here when she says it's just typical of her life. Then, of course, she's not going to get to have somebody to dance with and her partner wouldn't show up on time. But as she is thinking that this is terrible, things can't be worse, they do become worse. Because as she's looking across the room, she notices Devod making a scene.
Yes. He's sitting up on the high table, as we mentioned last chapter. There's a high table that's been extended for the guests. And of course, Devod is the host of the guests, the satrap and companions. He is up there as well. He's half standing up, leaning across the table, and frantically wiggling his fingers at her. In an agony of humiliation, she lifted her hand slightly and waved her fingers at him. He didn't stop. Instead, once he was sure she had seen him, he made frantic gestures for her to cross the empty dance floor and come up to the dais. Malta was dying. She longed to faint, but could not. The leader of the musicians, who was awaiting the signal from the dais to begin the music, looked puzzled. At last, she realized she had no other choice. This nightmarish moment would not be over until she had left the safety of the other young women and their papas and crossed the vast expanse of the empty floor alone and presented herself to Devod to hear his congratulations. So be it. So everyone is waiting for the signal from the high table, this dais, and the musicians are looking up there, but the one person who's doing anything is just waving at Malta to cross alone into the quietness of the hall to walk over to the high table.
Right.
So it's weird, like, and awkward.
I know Devod doesn't have social adeptness to understand cues, but seriously, it's that bad. He doesn't understand that this is horribly embarrassing and not what he should be doing in this moment.
Right, but in his eyes, he's doing this for the satrap, right? Like, this is the satrap's moment to get introduced to Malta Haven.
I guess, but it can't wait 5 seconds. He can't walk down from the dais and go get her. Like, the fact that he's staying at the table and making a scene,
half standing up and leaning across.
Yes.
It.
Like, just stand up all the way at that point. Might as well shout, too. Like...
So Malta takes a deep breath, glances over and sees Ronica's shocked white face, and then begins a slow crossing. She doesn't want to hurry. She feels like she should hurry, but she doesn't want to be unseemly because this is embarrassing enough.
Right.
So is just very graceful as she crosses it, as if it were perfectly normal for this to happen. She fixes her eyes into Vaad and walks over and suddenly is standing right before him, trying to ignore the whole situation.
Right. Except she realizes that the man sitting next to Vaad is the satrap, which means that he did not just embarrass her in front of all of Bingtown and the nobles. He also embarrassed her in front of the ruler of the nation, and she is furious.
Now she would faint. Instead, some sort of instinct took over. She sank down before the dais in a low curtsy. Through the blood pounding in her ears, she heard Vaad say enthusiastically, "This is the young woman I told you about, Malta Vestrit of the Bingtown Traders. Is not she the fairest young blossom you have ever seen?" Malta could not rise. If she stood now, she would have to look at their faces. Here she crouched in her pieced-together gown and her made-over slippers, and, "You did not exaggerate at all, Trader Restart. But why is this sweet flower unaccompanied?" Jamalian accent and a languid tone. The satrap himself spoke of her. The leader of the Bingtown Council took pity on her and signaled the musicians. So everyone else starts dancing at least, and it's right. Not the center stage and a main spectacle.
I just want to know how many of the moms are whispering to each other at this moment.
Oh, yeah, of course.
What is going through the heads of everybody else here? Are they like, oh, typical Vestrits? Making a scene? Are they feeling bad for Malta? Is this a typical Vaad making a scene moment? I don't know. I'm just so curious about how this is received by everybody else, but we don't get to know that.
Right. Malta decides to answer Satrap Kosgo's question directly, stands up, looks him in his eyes, and says, "I am alone because my father has been taken by pirates. Pirates that your Chalcedian patrol vessels did nothing to stop." The other people on the dais gasped. The satrap dared to smile at her. "I see this little one has the spark of spirit to match her beauty," he observed. As the hot flush colored Malta's cheeks, he added, "And at last I have met one Bingtown trader who admits that the Chalcedian galleys are simply my patrol vessels." One of the companions chuckled throatily at this cleverness. But the Bingtown Council did not look amused. Her temper got the better of her. "I shall concede that, sir, if you will concede they are ineffective. They have left my family bereft of both our ship and my father." So Kosgo rises to his feet, and she's thinking the worst. She's like, okay, he's going to order me dragged off and killed now.
Which, why would she think that? Is that a normal thing that the satrap can do?
Sure. I mean, but she's also a kid, right? And she literally just accused him of being ineffective.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay.
in an angry tone, and it's Malta, you know?
Yeah. I think I just was reading this, and I'm like, how often does a satrap have people hauled away to be murdered for saying something he doesn't like, for this to be a normal thought in her head? But I guess it doesn't have to be a normal thing for her to think it. She, as you said, she's a kid, so It would be a scary moment. But also, then Malta, why are you being angry in front of somebody that powerful? Like,
right.
You need to take a breather, control the temper. I don't know.
Well, the satrap responds, saying, "Well, as you blame me for your father's absence, there is only one way I can rectify this." She could not believe her ears. Could it really be this simple? Ask for it and get it? Breathlessly, she whispered, "You will command your ships to rescue him?" His laugh rang out through the music. "Certainly. That is their purpose, you know. But not right this moment. For now, I shall do my best to correct this tragic situation by taking his place on the dance floor with you." One of his companions looks shocked and the other horrified, and he kind of steps around and leads Malta to the dance floor.
And Vaad looks proud and fond.
Yes.
Fond of her. So she's not going to get any help from him. I find this so interesting because how Malta sees this, the satrap and this whole interaction is so different than every interaction we've had with Cirilla's point of view. And so I don't know. It's just kind of crazy to me that the satrap, or Cosgo, I guess, he is this like whiny man child who is obsessed with women and not really good at being the satrap. And according to Cirilla, kind of dumb. And then here he is in front of Malta and he seems perfectly eloquent. And I guess Malta's a kid, so any adult is going to seem eloquent. But it still feels like he's, I don't know, more cunning than
he's
we
also
get from
raised in court.
Yeah.
And admittedly by the Fool was a very, very smart, intelligent child who had great promise.
Mm. Fair enough.
So like he's not dumb. He's just drug addled.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Vice ridden and drug addled, I guess.
But I don't know. So I think that's something that really confused me from this chapter. He seems, I guess, more like regal in this. And before, I didn't see him as capable of being a regal. And obviously, that's due to who we had looking at him before. And I think Cirilla's in a different position and sees him in a different light.
Yeah, she's had the illusion broken because she was there when he became a satrap.
Right. So that's, but I just find that so interesting, the complete change of who he is, especially from the boat. I don't know. It's, I don't know. Anyway, just a thought that I had.
Malta's kind of entranced. I thought this was funny. This is a very true description, but it's also funny that she describes him as like extremely pale. His skin was so aristocratically white as to be almost pallid. But also she's kind of just stunned that the most powerful man in the world is offering his hand to her to dance. And she's just curtsying and not rising. And Davad basically says, "It's all right, Malta, you may dance with him." Such a shy and sheltered little thing she is. She scarcely dares to touch his hand. And then that kind of like shocks her into motion. But yeah, it's a very weird scene because Malta just doesn't know what to do. So she just goes with it, you know?
Right. So Davad is just really obtuse in this moment.
The satrap pulls her in closer than Malta is used to, and off they dance. She was awkward for the first 5 steps and then kind of gets swept up in the music and they start dancing more smoothly, I guess. She is kind of flattered by Cosgo because he's just raining down compliments. And all that she can really think of to respond with is, "Will you truly send your ships to rescue my father?" "Certainly. Why shouldn't I?" She lowered her eyes, then closed them. The music and his body leading hers were all she needed. "It seems too easy." She shook her head a tiny motion. "After all we have endured." He gave a small laugh, high as a woman's. "Tell me, little bird, have you lived all your life in Bingtown?" "Of course." "Well then, you tell me. What can you really know of how the world works?" Suddenly he drew her even closer, so that her breasts almost touched his chest. She gasped and stepped back from him, stumbling out of rhythm with the music. He caught the step easily and kept her moving. "Are you shy, little bird?" he asked merrily, but his hand tightened on hers almost cruelly. The music had ended. He let go of her hand. When she glanced around, she heard the murmur of many-footed rumors running. All eyes looked toward them, although none quite stared. He bowed to her deeply and graciously. As she sank into a curtsy, he breathed, "Perhaps we should speak later about rescuing your father. Perhaps you could better convey to me just how important it might be to you." She could not rise. Were his words a threat? Because she had stepped away from his touch, he would not send the ships to rescue her father? She wanted to cry out after him, to wait, wait, but he had already turned away from her.
I feel like this scene is a little weird to me. Not because it's unbelievable. It just, I feel like Malta knows this is how the world works. Like, she's been warned about men like this a lot and seems to understand that the way to get men to do what you want is to, like, I don't know, use their affections toward you. Like, that's how she's been operating whenever she's around men before. And now she's in front of the satrap, and all of a sudden she's this little girl who is so shocked that he can help her and he's going to help her for free. And wow, I can't believe it's that easy. It just feels really naive for Malta, who has been through so much up until this point. I just don't get where that's coming from, if that makes sense. That's
fair. I can see it kind of blindsiding her, because remember, she's had the revelation of men are ineffectual.
Right.
And all of a sudden, here's the most powerful man who she knows can make a change.
Yeah.
Saying like, yeah, I'll do that. So she's like, wow, okay. That was easy.
Yeah, fair. Okay, I get that. That would kind of mess with you a little bit, I suppose, especially if you're like, oh, wait, was it seriously that easy the whole time? Like, we could have just written to him and he would have done this. And,
right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Which.
And she, like, it takes a while to sink in, but she does recognize what the satrap is inferring.
Right.
And referencing later on in this chapter. But it's just, ugh.
Yeah.
Kind of, well, see Cosgo from the outside perspective.
Yeah, it's icky for sure. I just, and I'm not blaming her in any way for this situation. I don't think she's like doing anything that should warrant this sort of attention. I just think from what we know of her and how smart and savvy she seems up until this point, especially when it comes to men, it feels odd to then all of a sudden she's naive. You know, I guess, and like, right. I get that she is a kid. And I think that's something that I've said before is like, she should be naive. She doesn't know anything, but she isn't until now. I don't know.
She's still kind of naive about that stuff though, right?
That's true, I guess. Yeah. Like,
this is very brazen.
Yeah.
And all the stuff that she's had before trying to manipulate is, oh, now I'm going to gently caress your hands. And that's the only touch that we've had for 4 months.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. You know? Touché. Yeah.
It's just a little bit next level for her.
Yeah, fair. And fair enough. She's 14 and this is the ruler of the nation. So
yeah,
I get it. But that, I think that just stood out to me a little bit as like, huh, weird. I wouldn't picture Malta as falling for it, I guess. And thinking, oh, he's just going to do this for no reason. I don't know.
Well, she doesn't think that either, especially with those last comments. It's like, were his words a threat?
Right. Well, now she doesn't. But at first, she just accepts that and can't get over he offered to help. He's just going to help me.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little bit crazy.
That's what you're caught up on?
Yeah. Yeah. That she's like, won't drop it and doesn't recognize that he's just saying that, I guess. Which is brought up later by Rain, but we'll get there. She, at this point, is ready to leave the dance floor because she needs to think. So she can't call back the satrap. He is being swarmed by the other mothers in the area trying to get their daughters to dance with him too. So she decides to walk and try to find somebody that she knows. Though she sees Sir Wintrell coming towards her, she's like, no, I can't handle him right now. So she goes the opposite direction, just trying to find her mom or her grandma, even her little brother at this point. All she wanted was some safe refuge for a few moments until she could gather herself. And she's really worried that she's destroyed the chances of her father getting rescued safely. And then her arm is touched and it's Rain. Funnily enough, she does actually know that it's Rain without needing him to speak at all. He's touched her. She looks around. It's a veiled man. She knows it's Rain. It's the way his shoulders are, the elegance of his outfit, how he's put together. It couldn't be anybody but Rain. And I find that really funny after she made the joke that, of course, I'll know who Rain is. My heart leaps every time I see him to Dello. But it is kind of true. She does know, even though she can't see his face or any sort of features that would give away who it is behind the mask.
He's holding two glasses of wine and says, "You look pale. Do you need this?" And offers her one. And she just says, "I want my mother." To make it worse, she repeated it more desperately. "I want my mother." Rain's whole stance stiffened. "What did he say to you? Did he hurt you?" "No, no, I want my mother, now." "Of course." As if it were the most normal of behaviors, he tapped a passing trader on the shoulder and handed him the glass of wine. Rain turned back to Malta. "This way." He did not offer her his arm or try to touch her in any way. Did he sense that just now she could not have tolerated it? Instead, he gestured gracefully with a gloved hand and then walked slightly in front of her, parting the crowd for her. Folks stared after them curiously. So he could read the situation a bit and leads her over to her family. Kefria, of course, is like, "Oh, Malta, I was so worried, but you handled yourself beautifully. Whatever was Davad thinking? I was trying to get to you after you danced, and he dared to catch hold of my arm and advise me to tell you to come to him, that he could see you got another dance with the satrap." Malta was trembling all over. "Mother, he said he would send ships to rescue Papa, but then..." She faltered and suddenly wished she had said nothing. Why tell her mother? It would have to be her own decision. How important was it to her that her father be rescued? She knew exactly what he had insinuated to her. It was unmistakable. The choice was hers. If she was the one who would have to pay the price, did not the decision belong to her alone? And this is where Rain kind of butts in. "And you believed him, Malta? Like, he just said that he would rescue your father and you believed him? He was toying with you. How could he toss out such an offer as if it were a bit of flattery? The man has no compunctions at all, no ethics. You are barely more than a girl, and he torments you like this. I should kill him." "I am not a girl," Malta asserted coldly. Girls did not have to face decisions such as this. "If you believe I am such a child, where are your ethics in courting me?" She hardly knew what she was saying. She needed to be alone somewhere, to think about what the satrap had offered and what he had implied the price was. Her tongue flew on without her mind. "Or is this how you seek to make your claim exclusive, the first time another man shows an interest in me?" Her mother caught her breath sharply. Her eyes flitted from Rain to Malta. "Excuse me," she murmured, and fled their lover's quarrel. Malta scarcely noticed her going.
Now she knew her mother could not help her with this. This is such an interesting premise, I think, that now Malta, it's very Malta. I feel like this is back to land of believable Malta, where she's like, okay, this is a price. I'm the only one who can make this decision. I don't need to talk about it with anybody.
Right.
Which, no, for sure, talk to an adult about this because inappropriate. And also, they can explain to you, like Rain is trying to unsuccessfully.
He can just promise those things.
Yeah. He's not going to follow through. He's just playing with you so he can get what he wants.
It's and the Princess Bride.
Literally.
It's like, of course I will send the ships. Yes. All my fastest ships to find your Wesley.
Yes.
Except the four fastest, of course. You know, those have already been sent in every direction.
Yes. So it's frustrating to read from a reader's point of view because I feel like I'm behind a wall screaming, Malta, you idiot, don't even think about it. He's a jerk. He's not, this is not for you. Like, just get it, like, put it out of your mind. But obviously she can't hear me because she's not real. And she's not an idiot. It just, she's young and her father's life is at stake and she does not realize that somebody would lie like that, I guess. Which, kind of crazy to think about, because she lies all the time. But I guess men in power wouldn't lie. That's crazy. Oh.
Yeah.
Poor Malta.
And then Rain's comment kind of sets her off.
Right. Well, because he's going about it in a jealous boyfriend way, not in a, hey, this is actually really dangerous and he's not going to help you.
Yeah, exactly.
So it has an adverse effect because, of course, if Malta gets told you're young and naive and you don't know anything, she's going to go, I'll show you I don't know anything. I'm going to do the thing.
Right. Abruptly, Rain sketches a bow towards her. I beg your pardon, Malta Vestrit. You are a woman, not a child. But you are a woman newly admitted to society with little experience in the ways of low men. I thought only to protect you. He turned his veiled face to watch the dancers as they moved through the formal steps of a multi-partnered dance. His voice lowered as he added, I know that rescuing your father is foremost in your thoughts. It is a vulnerability in you just now. It was cruel of him to offer to help you. Odd. I thought it was cruel of you to refuse me when I begged your help. I now see you intended it to be kind. She heard the icy scorn in her own voice and recognized it. This is how my father quarrels with my mother, she thought, turning her own words against her. Something in her wanted to stop this, but she did not know how. She needed to think. She needed time to think, and instead everything just kept happening. The only presentation ball she would ever have was whirling on around her. She might be able to get the satrap to save her father, and instead of all the other girls watching enviously as her elegant beau danced with her, she was standing here having a stupid quarrel with him. It wasn't fair. I did not intend to be kind. I intended to be truthful. The music had ended and those last words didn't ring out loudly, but were clear enough that people kind of turned and like, huh? What's going on?
Right. And it's embarrassing. And she's just feeling really embarrassed and overwhelmed. Like, this is a lot to happen in a short amount of time. It's already a stressful situation. And it's really interesting to have her recognize that the way that she's fighting with Rain isn't healthy. And it's not a good thing to do. But it's the only way she knows how, because that's how her parents fight. And so she hasn't been modeled a different way, so she doesn't really know what else to do. And that's really sad, I think. And also does speak a lot to why Malta is the way that she is, if that's the kind of fighting that her parents do in front of her.
Yeah, exactly. So,
enough for her to recognize that her father even twists her mom's words around. It's not great. But they're in this moment, and clearly a lot has happened, a lot is going on, and Rain is trying to calm things down, at least, I guess. He's recognized that he's in the wrong here. He has made the wrong move. And before they can kind of smooth things over, Sir Wintrell appears.
Would you allow me the next dance? There was a small challenge in his voice, almost as if the words were directed to Rain rather than to her. Rain took it up. Malta Vestrit and I were sharing a conversation, he pointed out in a dangerously pleasant voice. I see, Serwin retorted, his voice equally controlled. I thought she might more enjoy sharing a dance with me. Without asking her, Rain took her hand in his. We were just about to dance. And there they go, sweeping off into the next one.
Right. I find it very interesting that Rain calls her Malta Vestrit, not Malta Haven. And Malta doesn't have any opinions on that.
Yeah. She was just announced as that, so I can see why Rain calls her that.
That's fair. But yeah, I just found it interesting that whenever she's announced to the concourse, it's, so Haven isn't good enough. Whenever her beau does it, it's like, yeah. I don't know. Just a funny thought. But of course, the two boys have to puff up their chest and act ridiculous, and Malta's kind of just letting it happen around her. She goes with Rain into this dance. It's a spirited dance, so she can either hold on or dance, and so she decides to dance, and she starts deliberately making the steps more elaborate, and Rain matches that, and soon they are just dancing together as one. They're a great partner. They're having a great time. She
can
looks
see
over.
Ronica smiling.
Yeah, and then realizes that she's smiling too, and she is having fun. And you know what? this is how her first ball should be, a fun time with her boyfriend and or her beau and just enjoying herself. And of course, bringing up another man is going to make Rain upset. It's not about him. She shouldn't have done it in front of him. It's a decision she has to make on her own. She'll just put it aside. It's not important right now. Their relationship is.
Rain speaks just her name, Malta. And it was not an apology for anything, but it was an affirmation of all he felt for her. A wave of feeling washed through her in response. And she just responds, Rain. The quarrel was swept away by their moving feet, trodden down and forgotten. Too soon the music was ending, and he spun her gracefully through the closing measure, then caught her briefly in his arms to halt her movement. It caught her breath as well. When we move together like this, she whispered shyly, I almost feel like we are destined to always move as one. He held her a moment longer in his arms than was strictly proper. It set her heart to racing. She could not see his eyes, but she knew he looked down into her face. He spoke softly. All you have to do, my dear, is trust me to lead you in your steps, he told her indulgently. His patronizing words popped the bubble he had created around them. She stepped free of his embrace to drop him a very formal curtsy. I thank you for the pleasure of the dance, sir, she told him coolly. You will excuse me now. As she rose, she nodded a farewell to him. She turned and walked away as if she knew where she was going. From the corner of her eye, she saw him start to come after her, only for a Rainwild man hasten up to him and catch him by the arm. Whatever the man wanted of him seemed more important than his pursuit of her. He halted and turned to him. Fine. She kept walking. And she's like, why do you have to spoil everything like that? Why do you have to say those words? And it's such condescending words to me.
Right.
Ruin the mood.
Fair. He should have kept his mouth shut there because things were going smoothly. It was a good dance. It was smoothed over mostly. I mean, mostly she just decided not to talk about the thing they were arguing about, which isn't a healthy option necessarily. But in this moment, it's not the time or the place, obviously, so it makes sense. And then for him to be like, yes, of course, my little cherub, you need to be led. Like, no. I don't know. It's so weird to me that Rain both says that she's like a willful woman who knows what she wants, but then acts as though she's this child that needs to be protected, that he can help.
Remember, he's never been in love either.
Yeah, but it's just, I don't know. And they work together, clearly. Like, they both have feelings for each other. We're not talking about the age gap, so I get it. But it's just frustrating. Like, I'm on Malta's side here. He should not have said it like that. And he needs to get it out of his head that she is this little baby that needs his protection. Like, yes, of course, everybody needs help protecting themselves, and especially in a situation like this. But he doesn't need to frame it like she's a child who needs his help. He needs to be like, you're my partner and this is something you lack, so I will make up for that. That's the healthy way.
So she storms off and can't see anybody that she knows. She's looking for someone, anyone. She sees the satrap surrounded by other Bingtown people, and she's like, well, that's a no-go. She's looking for her mother, literally anyone that she knows. It was suddenly so awkward to be alone. She imagined that every eye in the room tracked her solitary movement. All of a sudden, Serwin steps in front of her. She had to stop to keep from bumping into him. Perhaps we can dance now, he asked gently. She hesitated. It would anger Rain or perhaps fill him with jealousy, but she no longer wished to play such games. This was complicated enough without that. As if Serwin sensed her reservations, he nodded somberly to the dance floor. It did not take him so long to decide on a new partner. In disbelief, she turned to see what he indicated. Rain moved gracefully through the languid dance steps with one of the satrap's companions in his arms. It was not even the beautiful one. It was the unadorned woman in the cream gown that he held close and listened to so attentively. No, Serwin whispered, don't stare. Put your head up and look at me. Smile. And off we go.
Ugh. This...
the classic rom-com miscommunication.
Yes. Yes, that's basically what this whole chapter is.
Yeah.
But also, it is so funny that she's like, I don't want to play games anymore. Life is too complicated. And then she turns around. She's like, oh, he's going to play a game. I'll play this. Immediately forgotten that she doesn't want to play games anymore.
Well, she's just kind of frozen and goes along with Serwin. True. To be fair to her. So
true. But no, it's a little bit, I don't know. I just found it a little bit funny. And I do feel bad for her. I think it's really interesting. Malta, throughout this dance,
she's over Serwin now.
She is, for sure. But I think it's really interesting that she can't seem to figure out what her feelings are for Rain. Like, I truly think that she believes she doesn't like him. In a way.
No, she's too much like Althea. She's convincing herself that it's not love, that he didn't break her heart.
Okay. So you think that she...
I think it's just trying to convince herself that, no, it's because he lied to me or whatever, you know?
Okay.
That sort of thing. But she keeps comparing Serwin's dancing to Rain's here and is just feeling very awkward in it. But Serwin doesn't seem to notice that at all.
Oh, no. He's too busy complimenting her on weird things. And
she just tunes him out.
Yeah. She's like, if she mentions that at one point this would have been great and she would have loved it, but she just doesn't even know how to respond.
She set her teeth in a smile and endured them.
It's just so funny. And I think it does show a lot of growth on Malta's part, I think. In some ways. I mean, she's also...
It's at the same time.
Yeah.
Too busy staring at Rain and being like, I lost him. It seems... With the veil, it's so hard to tell, but it seems that this woman has captured his attention completely.
He's talking to her so closely and...
That simply, that quickly. One tart word too many and the man was gone. Yeah, so... mature in one way, but not in the next.
Well, know? I guess it's hard. They were fighting, and now he's dancing with somebody else. Like, I get it, but also I just think that there's too much happening. She just doesn't have time to process. And
right.
It's not like every other instance where she's had a lot of control over the situation. This is all outside of her control, which I think also makes her act a little bit more immature than normal. But I also... find it so odd that she would just assume that he at one dance with this woman and he's smitten with her for sure.
Right.
I don't know.
That's her 14-year-old talking right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she describes her feelings as she actually felt as if her heart had been tugged out of her chest, leaving only an empty space. Foolishness. She had not even decided whether or not she loved him. So that could not be it. No. It was that he claimed to love her and that she had foolishly believed him. Obviously, he had lied to her. It was only injured pride that she felt. She was sure of it. It was only that she felt angry because he had made a fool of her. Why should she care at all? She was right now dancing in the arms of another man, a very handsome man who obviously doted on her. She didn't need Rain. She had never even seen his face. How could she love him? So that is what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
That feels very Althea about Brashen.
Yeah, that's fair. It is similar in a lot of ways, yeah. And then, of course, after all that of, I don't care about him, then all of a sudden the companion leans in close and he indulges to let her get close to him.
To speak more privately.
Yeah, and she's immediately butthurt again.
Malta nearly stumbled. He was uttering, and Serwin tightened his grip on her. He was uttering some nonsense about how pink her lips were. What in Sa's name did he expect her to reply to such inanity? Should she compliment his teeth or the cut of his shirt? She actually heard herself say, "You look very handsome tonight, Serwin. Your family must be proud of you." He smiled as if she had praised him to the stars. "Such words from your lips mean so much to me," he assured her. The music ends, and he reluctantly releases her hands. Her traitorous eyes sought out Rain. He bowed low over the companion's hand and then gestured toward the doors that led out into the lantern-lit garden and walks of the trader's concourse. She tried to find some hardness or resolve to cling to, but all she felt was the desolation of her soul. "May I bring you some wine?" Serwin asked. "Please, I should like to sit down for a while." "Of course." And then we get Rain's perspective of that whole encounter.
Right. It's humorous. I feel bad for Malta, obviously. Like, it's not a fun situation to be in. And if there was any sort of healthy communication in her relationship with Rain, this wouldn't be as big of a deal. But of course, that's not the case. And poor Serwin, I feel like a little bit sorry for him, a little bit not, because Also, how do you go that whole dance not realizing that your partner does not care what you're saying? Right. They're not listening at all.
Yeah.
I think he likes hearing himself talk.
A wee bit obsessed.
Just a bit.
So, Greg is the one who approaches him and grabs his arms, Rain's arms, after the dance with Malta.
Right, because we're going back in time at this point.
Yep.
So when we're switching over to Rain's point of view, it is when Malta stormed away and he started to go after her, but she's all mad because he decided that whatever this Rainwild man had to say was more important.
Yes, but it is Greg in disguise.
Yes.
And he's like, okay, one of the Satrap's companions just danced with me. Rain's like, okay, congrats.
I hope it was the pretty one.
Yeah.
Let's go.
let me go. And Greg's like, no, you need to dance with her now.
Yeah. And I just want to pause to take a minute to say, I found it really funny that Malta and Rain both mentioned the pretty one. Like, there's
right. Yeah.
One of the companions is the beautiful one. And I don't know why that's, like, I feel bad for Cirilla, but also it's a little bit funny that they're so much alike. Like, hopefully right, the pretty one.
So Greg says, no, you should ask her for the next dance. I want you to hear for yourself what she told me. Afterwards, come and find me in the gardens near the pin oak on the east wall, on the east walk. We need to decide who else to tell and what actions to take. Greg's voice was taut with tension. Rain didn't want this now. He attempted levity. I need to speak to Malta first. Then we'll discuss burning warehouses. Greg didn't release him. It's not a jest, Rain. It won't wait. I fear we may be too late already. There's a conspiracy against the Satrap. Go join it, Rain advised him in annoyance. How could he think about politics just now? Malta was hurt. He could almost feel her pain himself. It was so intense. He had hurt her, and now she was wandering through the crowd like a lost kitten. He needed to speak to her. She was so vulnerable.
It's so annoying. His point of view does not make me like him more. I'll just say that.
It feels like Hob really played up the Rain thinking that she needed protection vibe.
Yeah.
In the last, like, chapter or two.
Yeah, which is kind of weird because
I didn't get that impression at all.
No.
At the beginning.
No, he liked her because of how strong-willed she was and how, yeah, like, romantic she seemed. And
maybe it's just because of the danger of all the politics. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Maybe,
but
it's because she danced with the Satrap and that, and he doesn't like the Satrap and all the politics surrounding that.
Yeah. Yeah, the Satrap has offered her something, and yeah, I don't know. It's very...
But either way, it's just a little, yeah.
Yeah, it's over the top, yep, for sure.
But Greg continues here, and he's insistent, saying, the Chalcedians and some of his own nobles plan to kill him, meaning the Satrap. Bingtown will take the blame for it, and they'll raise us to the ground with the blessings of all Jamalia. Please, Rain, it has to be now. Go and ask her to dance. I have to find my mother and sisters and ask them to start arranging for some of the other traders to meet us outside. Go ask her. She's in the plain cream-colored gown over by the high dais. Please. Malta had vanished. Rain shot Greg a look that he seemed to feel even through his veil. The trader's son let go of Rain's arm. He shrugged his shoulders and gave an angry shake of his head. Greg hastened away. Slowly, with his heart sinking inside him, Rain turned and made his way to the Satrap's companion. She was watching for him, and she split off from her conversation, and they meet in the middle, and he asks her to dance.
And worse still, the dance that he's asking her to dance to so he can talk is traditionally a lover's dance, and it's slow, and so usually people take the chance to get closer on the dance floor during it, and he has to do it with this random lady and not Malta, so he's pretty upset about that.
He remarks that she made an excellent dance partner for him, graceful and light-footed. Somehow that only made it worse. He waited for her to speak. Did your cousin pass on my warning to you? She finally asked. Her directness shocked him. He strove to be contained. And he plays a little bit coy, saying like, oh, not really, just beating around the bush, having her come out and say whatever news she has.
Right.
And Cirilla speaks up and's like, we don't have time for that. It occurred to me on the way here tonight that this would be the perfect time for them to put their plot in motion. Here you all are, all gathered together. Bingtown traders, Rainwild traders, with a satrap in your midst. All know how strong the feelings run against the new traders and the satrap's Bingtown policies. What better time to set off a riot? In the confusion, the satrap and his companions will be killed. Then the Chalcedians can move with just anger to punish you all. A nasty little scene, but who does it profit? Why? His voice said he found it improbable. Still playing a little bit coy, trying to get more information out of her.
Right. I do want to ask, do you think Cirilla genuinely thinks this is something that could happen?
I think so. Or is
she taking advantage of a moment, realizing this would be a good way to turn people to her side?
I think it's both. I think because we saw her right before she left for the ball, and she was thinking about plans and thinking about things to set in motion. So I think that's why I say partially.
Right.
I think she did consider this option, but I don't think she had any solid news that it was going to happen or anything like that. I think she's amping that up and taking advantage of the situation, like you said.
Okay.
But I think this had occurred to her that it could happen.
That's fair. I was going to say, part of me wants to believe that it's just her making it up, trying to get some sort of foothold to get herself power. Right. However, we also know that she does truly believe that the Chalcedians are going to kill the satrap. Like she genuinely believes that that's their plan, that they're going to get rid of him. So I don't know. Like, it's really hard to tell, I guess, either way. But I guess I'm leaning more towards, after hearing your position, I'm leaning more towards this is something that she genuinely believes is happening, not necessarily something that she made up on the spot to get power.
Yeah, I think she believes it's a possibility, especially with, you know, the interest that she knows the Chalcedians have in the Rainwild in Bingtown, and also all the nobles who just are like, yeah, the satrap can go sail away, because she talked about how weird that was before, and where did all these Chalcedian warships come from in the middle of the ocean that met up with us? You know, those sorts of things. So I think she's kind of piecing together that something is weird here.
Yeah.
But I don't think she thinks it's happening tonight and needs to happen. I think she's trying to, she's trying to save the satrap so she can preserve her own power. Mm. Because with the satrap gone, then her little scroll means nothing.
Right.
And her power means nothing. But also she is trying to save the satrap by getting him out of the way so she can take that power.
Right.
So it's going to work out for her in general. But Cirilla is trying to convince Rain here that that's probably what they're going to do. And Rain is still thinking, why would they do that? I mean, we have a lot of money coming through this. Why would they just give that to Chalced? And Cirilla makes arguments that maybe Jamelia just doesn't want to deal with it, and they'll just rather give Bingtown rather than fight for it later, because the Six Duchies usually keep Chalced occupied, but ever since the Red Ship War and the internal strife there, they've just been focused on rebuilding. So Chalced is, yes, they're still raiding the northern borders, but now they're starting to come south too. So maybe Jamelia just wants to give Bingtown over and they don't care anymore.
Right. And we also learned that Chalced has always claimed this area as their own and say that this is part of their territory.
We heard the same thing about the Six Duchies, and I don't remember which duchy exactly borders it, but yeah, whichever one they raid all the time.
Mm-hmm. They just feel as though their property has been taken, and so they think they have a right to it.
Yeah, so Cirilla ends with, you know, Chalced also looks south to Bingtown and its rich trade and the Rainwild River lands. Lands? Rain gave a snort of contempt. There is so little. He halted his words abruptly, recalling to whom he was speaking. They are fools. On the ship, coming here, for a moment the woman seemed to have sudden difficulty speaking, as if she could not catch her breath. I was held captive for a time in the captain's quarters. He waited, then leaned closer to capture her soft words, which is the moment that he leans closer. There were charts in his room, Bingtown Harbor, the mouth of the Rainweld River. Why else would he have such things if he did not intend to use them?
Is this real? Or is this a detail she's making up to make it seem more real?
It's possible it was real, but even though it was, I don't know, just a few chapters back, I don't recall her mentioning the maps.
I feel like she said that she tried to look through the paperwork and she thought she put it back the way it was, but he must have known because he beat her up. But I don't remember that being a Bingtown chart. And I don't remember her getting anything out of it because it was all in Chalcedian and she can't read Chalcedian.
There was a little bit that she got out of it, which is like this bill of sale or something.
Right, yeah. Right.
But yeah, I'm not sure if those charts actually existed or not to her. But either way, she's kind of right about the motive that they have.
Right.
Rain is still kind of saying, no, the Rainwell protects its own, only we know the secrets of how to get up there. And Cirilla continues on saying, tonight there are many of you here, representatives from many Rainwell families, I am told. If they were taken hostage in the plundering of Bingtown, can you be so sure that none of them would reveal your Rainwild secrets? Her logic was relentless. Suddenly, small inconsistencies made sense. Why else allow the Kendry through the blockade and into the harbor? So he starts speaking aloud, saying, you know, they would have some allies here among the new traders, people whose ties to the slave trade in Chalcet are as strong or stronger than their links to Jamalia. People who have lived amongst us and learned enough of our ways to know that both Bingtown traders and Rainwell traders would be gathered here tonight. If I were you, I would not be positive that there were not such folk among the Bingtown old traders as well, she pointed out quietly. And so Rain immediately jumps to Davod Restart.
Right. I do just want to pause. Am I misreading this when it says they would have allies among the new traders here? Is here supposed to be the ball? Because
Bingtown.
Okay. That's what I'm like, new traders aren't at this ball. They're not allowed. Yeah, otherwise, the Rainwild people wouldn't be there.
It's Bingtown.
Okay. That's okay. I misread it.
Because they're talking about all of Bingtown in general there, that the Chalcedians would have allies amongst the new traders that have moved to Bingtown because of the slave trade.
Okay.
Or, you know, ties to family or whatever.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But yes, so he believes that Davod Restart is also in on this plan.
Cirilla kind of convinces him of her veracity, saying like, you know, if I knew of this, I wouldn't have come here. I kind of figured it out. And I am telling you because I don't want to die, but also because I don't want to see Bingtown die. It's kind of my life's work to know Bingtown secrets.
Yeah, I've been studying this my whole life and I don't want it to die in front of my eyes.
I fought really hard to get here. So, you know, I don't want to die for that. What do you suggest we do? And here's Cirilla's masterstroke. Act before they do. Take the satrap and his companions hostage, yes, but keep us safe. Alive, he is a bargaining chip. Dead, he is the spark that ignites the fire of war. Not all the Jamalian nobles can be involved in this. Send a message out somehow to alert those who are loyal to the satrapy. Tell them what is transpiring here. They will mount an effort to aid you if you promise to return Kosko unharmed. There will be war with Chalcid, but eventually there is always war with Chalcid. Take the time I have given you by this warning and secure the town as best you can. Gather supplies, hide your children and families, get word to the folk up the Rainwild River. He was incredulous. But you say it is most likely they will act tonight. There is no time for any of that. You are wasting time dancing with me now, she pointed out acidly. You should be getting the word out right now. So she says she suspects that there will be incidents tonight, fires, riots, whatever it takes to ignite a full-blown riot and fights in the city. It will spread out to the ships in the harbor, anything that could get word to the Chalcedian ships so they have an excuse to come to shore.
Right. By morning light, Bingtown will be burning is how she ends that. It is kind of weird that she's randomly like, take time, prepare for this. And Rain's like, what do you mean take time and prepare? You said it's happening tonight. She's like, yeah, and you're wasting time. What? It's so weird. It is weird.
It's Cirilla.
It's true. She's like trying to be really dignified and I'm a leader, so I know what you need to do. And then when he points out the flaw, she's like, okay, and you're wasting time. Why are you dancing with me? It just makes me laugh. Like, okay, Cirilla.
So this song ends and he's like, well, the others are gathering outside. We should join them, and gestures to the door. And then he looks around and sees Malta walking away with her hand on Sir Wintrell's arm. He could not simply leave the gathering like this, not after, you know, the fight that they had.
Right. And he knows how it looks. He knows that this is going to make her think something's going on. So he decides that he needs to right things with her. He needs to go talk to her. So he says to Cirilla, if you go down this way, the lantern should light your way. Are you okay to go alone? And by the look on her face, he knows that he has just done something unspeakably rude. But she does say, I should be fine. Are you going to be long? And he says, I hope not, and walks away.
He does find Malta sitting alone.
Yes. Yeah, so Malta is alone, and he says that when he stood before her, she looked up quickly. The sudden light of hope in her eyes could not quench the fear that was there. Rain, she began, but he cut her off before she could apologize. I have to go somewhere. It's very important. I may not be back this evening. You'll have to understand.
I don't know if she was going to apologize.
Yeah.
I think she was going to ask, like,
what's going on?
Hey, do you still like me?
Also, Rain, this is the worst plan you've ever had. What do you mean you're going to go up to her to clear the air and then make it seem worse than it is? Like, hey, I'm going to leave. Don't worry about it. You got to trust me. Okay, so obviously Malta does not just simper and say, okay, Rain. She goes, what do you mean? What's going on? I can't tell you. You'll just have to trust me now. He paused. I'd like you to go home as soon as possible. Would you do that for me? Go home? Just leave my presentation ball and go home while you go do something more important? Rain, this is impossible. The meal has not been shared. The gifts our kinship have not been offered. Rain, we've only shared one dance. How can you do this to me? I've looked forward to this all my life, and now you say that I should hurry home because you've found something more important to do? Malta, please understand. This isn't something I chose. Fate doesn't respect our wishes. Now, I have to go. I'm sorry, but I have to go. He longed to tell her. It wasn't that he didn't trust her. It was her family's connection to Davod Restart that worried him. If Davod was a traitor, it was important that he believe their plot was still secret. What Malta did not know, she could not accidentally betray. My guy, I am begging you to give her any more context. Like, that whole... From his point of view, too, it's so dramatic. It's so, oh, I'm doing what I can to save Malta. And Malta's bringing up very good points of, this is my presentation ball. This was like the biggest night of my life. Dinner hasn't even been served yet. There are roles that my family has to play, and you want me to go home? And I don't know. He just needs to give her anything. And he refuses. He decides that the miscommunication is more important.
Well, remember, they're both misunderstanding what the other thinks as well, because he's just like, oh, I said hurtful words to her and she stormed off. And that's why I think she was about to apologize to me for storming off. Right. And then we'll make up, I'll apologize to blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, he's coming over to tell me about this other woman or like dance with me again or something.
Right.
And we'll be fine, blah, 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 blah. And now it's like, I can't tell her because she's could betray this. And she's like, oh, he's being secretive and has to go do something more important, and says that to Rain. I kind of understand what you're going to do. Go see that woman. You know? Yeah,
I think I know exactly what it is that's more important to you than I am. I wish you joy of it. She looked aside from him. Good evening, Rain Cooperus. She was dismissing him as if he were a recalcitrant servant.
And he was very torn about whether to go or like try to explain more or get her to go home, because he could tell that she wasn't going to. And then Sir Winchell comes back, jostles him deliberately.
I do, just before we go on, want to make the point. It is so dumb of him not to even say, stay away from Dvad or whatever, because he thinks Dvad's a risk. And he knows that Dvad usually takes her family home. It's well known that the Vestrits get in his carriage all the time. And also, he knows their financial position is not a good one. Why would they have a carriage at their disposal to just leave? Why wouldn't he make sure there was a way for her to get home? I think that also makes me upset, because he's like, will you do this for me? Will you go home? But doesn't tell her it's really dire. I'll make sure there's a carriage for you. He doesn't make sure that she's not with Dvad at any point.
Why would that be an issue? Even in Rain's eyes.
To go home with Dvad?
Yeah.
Because he thinks that there's going to be somebody attacking the satrap. So she goes home in Dvad's carriage with, like...
No, because in his eyes, Dvad is the one, is part of that plot.
Oh, okay. I see.
So anyone with Dvad would be safe.
Okay.
And he doesn't want to tell her anything about, like, stay away from Dvad, because then if she mentions that Rain was acting weird about it, then Dvad might know and would be the traitor, right? And relay
sure.
that.
Okay.
So Rain is trying to avoid anything that would be weird surrounding Dvad. So I think not mentioning Dvad, I agree with you, like, not even, you know, making sure she had a way to get home is a little weird. But
right.
the whole Dvad thing, I don't see any issue with that, because okay. if this plan were to go through, which, you know, Dvad is not a traitor trying to kill the satrap.
Right.
He welcomed the satrap with open arms. If that were true, then the Vestrits would be safe with Dvad as long as they accepted that new rule, right?
Right.
The Chalcedians coming in.
Okay, yeah, I guess. I don't know. It just feels like a dangerous position to put her in something goes down tonight, to like even have her where it's going to happen, especially if he thinks Dvad is in charge. It just feels like more unnecessary danger when he could just say something bad is going to happen. I can't tell you more than that. Like, even that much. Like, I think something bad's going to happen. Please don't tell anybody, but you need to go home.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Like, that's an... I don't know.
Well, Malta dances 3 more times with Serwyn, and she's just kind of, again, comparing the lackluster night of the party of dancing with Serwyn versus when Rain was there.
Yeah. Before we get to this, I would like to back up a little bit to when Rain actually leaves, because we kind of skipped over that, and I think it's a little bit important.
Sure.
So when Serwyn comes over and jostles him again on purpose, Rain is pretty upset. He wants to murder Sir Wintrell, but knows that he can't. And he specifically says, if he stayed by morning, they might all be dead. So he doesn't have time to fix this. And the hardest part of turning and walking away was knowing that by morning, they might all be dead no matter what he did. He did not look back at all. If Malta had looked stricken, he would have returned to her. If she had been simpering at Trell, he would have... it killed the boy. No time, never any time to live his own life. He left. I think that's so dumb to me. Like, you think he genuinely believes death is on the line, that everybody might be dead by tomorrow morning.
That's what Cirilla said.
I know, but I'm saying he genuinely believes that. And so he's just going to let there be a misunderstanding between this girl that he supposedly loves so much. He's not going to take a moment to make sure she gets to safety. Like, what do you mean you love her? That's not love. I feel very Hamilton versus Burr in the Hamilton musical when Hamilton has gotten married to Eliza and he's talking with Burr, and Burr says that he has a woman, but she's married to a British officer. And he's like, whoa, why aren't you going after her if you love her? And he's like, people die and I can't go after her. You don't know if you're backing the right horse, blah, blah, blah. And Hamilton's like, okay, but if you actually loved her, why would you throw away your shot? Period. Like, what if Rain really truly loves Malta, why isn't he making sure she's safe, making sure she's going to be okay, spending his last moments saying, I love you and I don't want you to misunderstand that? It's weird to me for him to be like, we might die no matter what, and I'm fine dying and having her die with a misunderstanding and she thinks I don't love her. Couldn't it be me? Couldn't it be me with somebody I loved? That's all I'm going to say.
Well, with Rain walking out of the party, all life seems to have left the Trader Concourse Hall, and Malta kind of notes that it's just diminished with Rain's absence.
Yes.
It suddenly seemed there were fewer couples on the dance floor, less laughter and talk in the room. Bleakness welled from the bottom of her soul, inundating her again. She could recall that she had been briefly happy earlier today, but the memory seemed shallow and false. As the music faded, it was a relief to see her mother at the edge of the dance floor, gesturing unobtrusively for Malta to come to her.
Interestingly, actually a lot of the life has left the party because
people
things are
left.
Going down and a lot of people are leaving and there's no laughter anymore because there's a very serious thing happening. So it's not just her imagination, but she is thinking that it's because she's lovelorn and stricken. She's not really thinking fully correctly, I guess.
Kefria asks, have you had a good time, Malta? It's not been what I expected. I don't think anyone's presentation ball is quite what one expects. I hate to ask this of you, but I think we should leave soon. Leave? But why? There's still the shared meal, the presentation of the gifts. Hush, Kefria bid her. Malta, look around. Tell me what you see. Where have all the Rainwild traders gone? I don't know. A number of the Bingtown traders have vanished as well, without any explanation or any farewell. Grandmother and I fear there is some trouble afoot. I went outside for a breath of air and I smelled smoke. The blockade of the harbor has increased tension in the city. We fear a riot or outbreak of some kind. She kept the calm smile on her face as if she discussed the ball with Malta. We feel we would all be safer at home. But she fell silent. It was hopeless. All joy and light had gone out of the evening anyway. To stay here would just extend the death throes of her dream. I shall do as you think best. I suppose I should tell Dello farewell. I think her mother already took her home. I saw Trader Trell speaking to his son just a moment ago, and now I do not see Serwin either. They'll understand. Well, I don't, Malthus replied sourly. I am sorry for you. It is hard to see you come of age in such troubled times. I feel you are being cheated of all the things we dreamed you would do, but there is nothing I can do to change it. I know that feeling, Malta said, more to herself than to her mother. Sometimes I feel completely helpless, as if there is nothing I can do to change any of the bad things. Other times I fear I am simply too cowardly to try. Kefria smiled a genuine smile. Cowardly is the last word I would use to describe you, she said fondly. How will we get home? The hired coach will not be back for hours. Grandmother is talking to Tudavad Restart. She will ask if his coach could take us home. It would not take long. It would be back long before the ball is scheduled to end. So this is where, in my reading of this for this podcast, I was like, make the connection, Malta. Make the connection. All the Rainwild traders are gone. A lot of other people are gone too. Who just left? Who did you just have a conversation with? Probably 9 minutes ago, because there's three songs only.
Well, songs weren't as short back in the day. They were probably more like, it's been 30 minutes.
Okay, still 30 minutes. Just 30 minutes ago, You had the love of your life who broke your heart and walked away saying, I have to go do important things. I'm sorry. Go home soon.
Literally go home.
And she's like, no.
That doesn't have anything to do with this.
30 minutes later, why is everybody gone? I was just like, Malta, make the connection. But, just do it.
I mean, like, I get it, I guess.
I get it, too. It's just in my head. I'm like, rom-com things. Make the connection.
Yeah, yeah. I do wish.
Be smart.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely wish that she caught on and was like, oh, maybe he did have something. Like, maybe something what is going on. Right. Well, and that's the other thing is, it's crazy to me that she wouldn't assume something is going on knowing the state of everything.
Right.
Like, she wouldn't even think, oh, maybe there's a riot happening. She just is like, oh, no, this is a woman thing. He's found a new woman and he wants me to not see it. Like, what? I don't know.
Veronica comes up and says, yeah, Devad Restart has let us use the carriage, but there is a condition. He demands that Malta come and bid the satrap farewell before she leaves. I told him I thought that improper in putting herself forward, but he insists on it. There's no time to argue, so they have to go. Kefria goes off to find Selden, and she, before she leaves, says, Malta, do you mind? Grandmother will be with you, so you needn't be afraid. Malta suddenly wondered how much they had deduced about her earlier encounter with the satrap. I'm not afraid, she retorted. Shall we meet you outside? So Kefria goes off. Veronica and Malta go to the dais.
Right.
And approach.
And on the way, they have a really good conversation.
Yeah.
Veronica brings up that I think we shall host a tea 10 days from now. The group of women presented this year is not large. Shall we invite them all? Malta was startled. A tea at our home? In the garden, I think. We should be able to trim it up decently. Now that the berries are ripening, we could make little tarts to serve. In my day, such little tea parties often had a theme. And then she goes on to talk about how when she was Malta's age, her mother had made them a little tea party that was lavender themed. And it was actually really gross, but it was so exciting to have a theme that it didn't matter. And that's when it hits Malta. Grandmother was trying to make her feel better. So then Malta kind of plays along. And I think this is huge growth in their relationship.
Yeah, it is. That
first of all, Veronica feels bad for Malta. And second of all, is making plans so that Malta can have something nice when this has gone awry.
I think it's slowly been shifting. And I mean slowly.
Yes.
That Veronica has sympathized with her and the shared hardship has all kind of brought them to the same side of things. They're not necessarily against each other anymore.
Yeah, I think especially when they found out about Kyle, in Ronica's mind, they're all on the same team now. There is no us versus her for Malta, which I don't think Malta has agreed with, but I do see Malta being nicer to her mother and grandmother.
Yeah, even in her thoughts.
General. Yeah. She still doesn't love Althea, like, just isn't a big fan, but I think especially how she thinks about her mom and her grandma and seeking out her mom when something went wrong at this ball, I think it just shows that their relationship is mending and
right
that clearly there is a little bit of growth happening there.
Oh, Malta, this has all been so unfair to you, grandmother began. Then, chin up, cheery smile, here comes Devad. Well, I do think it is tragic, just tragic, to hurry this sweet girl home like this. Is her headache truly that bad? Devastating, Malta replied quickly. So that had been her grandmother's ruse. I am not accustomed to such late hours, you know. I told grandmother I only wish to bid you good night and thank you for your kind offer of your coach, and we shall be on our way. Oh, my poor little sugar plum! Surely you will at least bid the satrap good evening. After all, I have already told him you must leave, and I've come to escort you while you say goodbye. That sealed her doom. No gracious way out. I suppose I could manage it, Malta said faintly. And so, Devad basically rushes her over.
Yep.
Hurries on. As she's trying to catch her breath, Devad is saying, you know, here she is, Magnadon Satrap.
Yeah, he's like being weirdly rushed about this whole thing. She goes to curtsy and he jerks her back up so that her curtsy ends up looking really bad and awkward. and then is like, okay, Malta, say something. It's really weird. I don't get it. I don't understand why he is rushing here.
Yeah, so Cosgo's saying, like, we've only had the briefest conversations and on such important topics. I wish we could have had longer. Malta could think of nothing to say. She had sunk into a deep curtsy the moment the satrap deigned to notice her. Now Davod rather ungracefully took her arm and hauled her to her feet again. The act made her appear clumsy, again embarrassing her. Aren't you going to tell him good night? Davod prompted her as if she were a backward child. So she correctly bids him good evening, thanks for the dance, etc., etc., and then the last comment, I pray you will act soon on your offer to send rescue for my father. I fear I may not be able to, sweet child. Trader Daw tells me that there is some unrest down in the harbor tonight. Surely my patrol vessels must stay in Bingtown until it is subdued. Before Malta could decide if she had to answer, Cosgo turns back to Davod and says, would you have your coach summoned? Trader Daw says, you know, I might not. Maybe I shouldn't stay. You know, maybe it's not safe anymore. So I'm going to leave in your coach.
I shall be sorry not to witness all of your quaint festival, of course, but I see I am not the only one to prefer caution over entertainment.
And even while they have been talking, the crowd has thinned substantially again. There's only a few young couples still moving on the dance floor in apparently blissful ignorance. Davod, of course, looks uncomfortable, saying, like, I just promised it to the Vestrits. Sorry. It'll be really quick, though, I promise you. Satrap rises and says, it will not need to, Traitor Astarte. Surely you could not have intended to send these women off by themselves. I shall accompany them to their home to see them safely there. Perhaps young Malta and I shall have a chance this evening to continue our interrupted conversation. The smile he gave her was a lazy one. Now Ronica sweeps in a rustle of gown. She curtsied low, near demanding that the satrap recognize her. After a moment, he nodded at her irritably. Lady, he acknowledged in a flat voice. She rose. Magdadon Satrap, I am Malta's grandmother, Ronica Vestrit. We would, of course, be honored to have you call upon us, but I fear our household is a very humble one. We could scarcely accommodate your visit tonight, at least not in the manner in which you are no doubt accustomed to being welcomed. We would, of course, he interrupts you and says, you know, the whole purpose of this, interrupts Ronica, excuse me, says the whole purpose of this is to experience things that I'm not accustomed to. So yeah, you're going to be fine. Davod, have everyone bring all over my luggage. We'll be staying with the Vestrits.
My luggage and my personal servants tonight. And the way he spoke, it was not a request. Ugh, yeah. Davod has really made a mess of things.
This time it's not really his fault.
I mean,
even.
It is. This would not have happened if he would not have...
insisting, yeah, on saying goodbye, whatever.
Yeah. Sure. And by just being like, well, actually, the Vestrits have my carriage. Why not just not say anything? Just be like, okay, I'll call for it. And then it takes a long time. Right. You don't have to tell him. He doesn't need to know.
But it's a satrap.
Ugh.
Magdadon Satrap, I fear we shall be very crowded in the coach. Not if you ride on top with the driver. Companion Cirilla seems to have vanished. Be it upon her own head. If she will not intend me as she should, then she must bear the consequences. Let us leave. So Cirilla has left as well, it appears.
Right, she's nowhere to be seen. I think it's so funny for Cosgo to be like, okay, so ride with the rider. It does not need to be crowded. Like, it's fine. Let's go. Yeah.
So they're kind of hurrying off in different directions here, and Ronica and Malta have a moment alone. And Malta asks, what are we to do? We shall be courteous, her grandmother assured her, and no more than that, she added in a dangerously low voice, trying once again to assure Malta.
Right. And they have to hurriedly put on their cloaks, get ready to go. Things are really dying down fast at this dance. So, like, people are already leaving. She's realizing this is not a great situation to be in. And then they get to the carriage, and surprisingly, Cosgo attends to Malta before his companion and gets her in the carriage and then follows her and sits right next to her and then has his companion sit on his other side.
Yep. There is a smell of smoke on the air. Can't really tell where it's coming from. And then once again, he gives Devad a look and says, "You will have to ride up top with the driver, Trader Restart. Otherwise, we shall be unforgivably crowded." So Devad has to rock the whole carriage as he climbs up and gets situated.
Right.
But it's Kiki, Satrap, Malta, and then on the other side, Selden, Kefria, and Ronica.
Yes. And it is dead silent in the carriage as they go. They are going towards the Vestrid home, and it's super awkward because clearly tensions are high for a lot of different reasons.
Malta's fearing that she might have dozed off. She just wants to be alone, and she's tired after everything, really.
Right. And companion Kiki tries to break the silence and make it less weird and says, "The summer celebration was very interesting to me. I am so pleased that I could witness it." Her vapid words hung in the air. Then Ronica exclaimed, "By Saw's breath, look at the harbor." And that's when they find out that basically the entire harbor is on fire, boats included. It's not looking good.
It was not just a warehouse or two. The entire waterfront seemed to be burning, as well as several of the ships. Malta stared in horror, scarcely hearing the exclamations and speculation of the others. Well, she knew that only fire could kill a live ship. Had the Chalcedians known that as well? Were the ships that battled the flames out near the mouth of the harbor live ships, or the ships and galleys the satrap and his party had come on? But they had only that brief glimpse, and the distance was too great to be sure what she had seen. "Perhaps we should go down there and see for ourselves," the satrap suggested boldly. He raised his voice. "Coachman, take us down to the harbor." "Are you mad?" Ronica exclaimed, heedless of whom she addressed. "That is no place for Selden or Malta just now. Take us home first, then do as you will." Before the satrap could reply, the coach gave a lurch as the coachman whipped up his horses. As blackness closed around them once more, Ronica exclaimed, "What can Devad be thinking to travel at such a pace in the darkness?" "Devad? Devad, what are we doing?" There is no direct reply, because there's only muffled shouts exchanged on top of the coach. Then Malta thought she heard another voice. She leans out of the window, and behind them, she thought she saw a glimpse of something. "I think some horsemen are coming up behind us quickly. Perhaps Devad is just trying to get us out of their way."
So this situation is escalating rapidly. We have the scene of the harbor on fire, and then all of a sudden,
The coach is running really fast.
Weirdly, the satrap wants to go down and see the commotion, which feels odd to me. What does he think he's going to do?
He just feels invincible. He's a satrap, right?
I guess. Nobody's going to hurt him.
Yeah.
Yeah. With a cart full of women. Not that women can't be of use, but like...
Yeah, in the society or whatever. Yeah. He's just used to being obeyed. You know?
He's
a petulant child, remember?
Also, I am so curious to know what he would have said to Ronica.
Yeah, true.
I need to know, is he like off with her head, you know? But yeah, I also want to know, what do you think is happening between the coachman and Devad right now? Like, are they fighting each other? Are they hearing something behind them?
I don't know. Yeah, I really don't know.
I don't know either. And neither does Malta or anybody in the carriage.
Yeah.
They are going. They think somebody's behind them, maybe because Malta heard something and maybe saw something.
They're sliding back and forth. If they weren't packed so tightly, they would be sliding all around the interior of the coach. Kefria is commanding her, like, "Don't lean on the doors," while Ronica's crying out, "Devad, make him slow the horses, Devad." Malta is clinging desperately to the windowsill to keep from being thrown about, and she glimpses sudden movement outside it. A horse and rider had pulled abreast of them. "Yield," he shouted. "Halt and yield to us, and no one will be hurt." "Highwaymen," Kiki exclaimed in horror. "In Bingtown," Ronica retorted. "Never." Yet now there was another horse and rider on the other side of the coach. Malta glimpsed him, and then she heard the driver shout something. A wheel bumped wildly, and she was thrown against the side of the coach as it slewed to one side. For an instant, it seemed to recover. All would be well, she told herself, and then the opposite side of the coach simply sank with an abrupt lurch. She was flung hard against the satrap, who sprawled against companion Kiki. Incredibly, she was falling sideways, and then the roof of the coach was somehow almost under her. A door flew open beside her. She heard a scream, a terrible scream, and saw a sudden great flash of white light. We jump over to Ronica's.
Right. The rest of this chapter is kind of jumbled. It's really unclear how much time is passing, what's going on, and everything's sort of happening at once. We don't ever really get clarification, I guess, on what happens in the carriage or outside of the carriage. We don't really know, I guess. But there has been an accident, obviously. A purposeful accident, I guess, because the people were following them.
Yes. I mean, the plan, I would assume, and according to Cirilla, and according to the directions, is basically we're going to kidnap the companions and the satrap, right?
Right.
Going to keep them safe, send them to a safe place and hide them out and try to negotiate things. So they want them safe and sound. They want the coach to pull over. But the driver and maybe Devad is urging them to like, hey, there's people behind us. Let's get home to safety. Maybe they're just crazy running wild out of control. And we find out later that the coach is flipped over twice during this. So, yeah, Ronica is flung out. Kefria was flung out.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Yeah.
And the first thing that we get from Ronica, who has been flung out, is Devad is dead.
She could hardly believe her own voice. She had come across his body in the darkness, groping her way up the steep and uneven slope toward the road. She knew it was Devad by the heavy embroidery on his jacket. She was glad it was too dark to see his body. He had been on top. The coach had flipped.
Yeah.
His skull probably hit the ground really hard.
Yeah. They didn't really have seatbelts, so... And even if they did, I guess, I feel like usually whenever the people are sitting, they're like still above where the coach is. So not a good place to be. So not super safe.
She crawls away from him.
Yeah. She then starts calling out for Kefria and Malta and Selden and doesn't hear anything. She does hear something by the road.
She says she calls them without strength. Mm. I mean, she's still dazed as well, right?
Right.
And she's crawling around just trying to get her bearings.
Right. And she says above her, she could see the bulk of the coach between her and the uneven light of torches. There were voices up there and people moving in the darkness. Maybe her children were up there. So something's happening in this moment.
Yep. And we can assume that it's the people who
were following.
Were on the horses and they are taking the satrap and Kiki.
Yes. I am dying to know who these people are. Like,
we know one of them is Road Cairn.
Right. But I want to know, like, did they not recognize Malta? And they just thought, well, guess she's dead. Left her there. That's horrible. I don't know. Not good. So anyway, there are people around the carriage right now. And then it goes back to Ronica realizing she doesn't really know how she got out of the carriage. She can't recall clearly how she had gotten out of the coach. She could not understand how she could be so far away from it. Had she been thrown clear? Then she hears Kefria calling Mama, Mama, just as she used to call when she was a child and tormented by nightmares. I'm coming, Ronica called. And then she falls again because there's prickly bushes catching on her. And she realizes the entire left half of her body stings as though she had lost the skin of it. But she could manage that. She could ignore the pain if she could just get to her kids. And then she falls again. But with this fall, she's like, I think a lot of time has passed. It's really hard to understand what's going on.
She can't see anything at all now.
Yes. She feels like she might have fainted.
No more flickering light.
Had there been people moving about, or had she imagined that? She listened hard. There, a sound, a squeaking of breath or weeping. She scrabbled towards it. And then in the darkness, she found Kefria by touch, which freaks Kefria out. And then she realizes it's her mom. And
Selden's curled up on Kefria. And Ronica asks her, first words to Kefria, "Is he hurt?" "I don't know. He won't speak. I can't find any blood." "Selden, come here. Come to Grandma." He did not resist her, but he did not try to come to her. She felt the boy over. No blood, nor did he cry out at her touch. He simply huddled, shivering. She gave him back to Kefria. For a miracle, neither of them seemed seriously injured. Kefria had some broken fingers, but more than that she could not tell, nor could Ronica see. The trees were too dense. No moonlight or starlight reached them to help them search. "Malta?" Ronica asked at last. She would not mention Davod before Selden. "I haven't found her yet. I heard the others at first, then I called. I thought I heard you, but you didn't come." Malta never answered. "Come, let's get back up to the road. Perhaps she is there." And Kefri is like, "Help me with Selden." So Ronica has to talk to Selden.
Right. Well, I think what Kefria was asking was, "Help me carry Selden." And Ronica was like, "No." And she said, she decides to talk to Selden and talk about how, "Hey, remember last time when you were so brave about wanting to work with the buckets to help? Well, you need to be brave again because we cannot carry you and you're a big boy. You need to walk.
And you can help us get up this hill."
Yeah. And I think that was really smart of her to do, to give him a task of helping the two of them up and to remind him, like, you've been brave before. You can do it again. We're going to be brave together right now. And I just feel so bad for poor Selden. He's very scared, and rightly so. He's like, what, 10? Maybe 9?
Something like that, yeah.
So, yeah, scary situation to be in. And he does. That
I think
seems
he's younger than 10.
Yeah. I think so, too.
I think he was like 7 at the beginning of the books.
Okay. So, yeah. So he's like 8. And he's being incredibly brave here, though, because that does help. He uncurls himself and he helps his mom and grandma get up the hill. So he's still clearly scared and upset, but it's at least better than before.
Yeah. So. And the trees are thinner there. And they can see a little bit more around. They reach the coach. There's a dead horse still tangled in its traces. Between the coach and the road uphill of it, the saplings were bent and snapped. They searched all around the coach, and neither of them spoke of what they were really doing. They searched for the ground for Malta's body, feeling about in the dark. After a time, Kefria said, "She might be trapped inside the coach." It lay on its side on the steep slope with its roof pointing downhill. The coachman's booted feet stuck out from under it. Ronica and Kefria both noticed them, but neither of them pointed them out to the other. Selden had seen enough tonight. He did not need to be shown that. He did not need to wonder, as they did, if Malta's body was under there too. Ronica guessed that the coach had rolled at least twice before coming to rest. Even now, it did not look stable. "Be careful." "I'll be careful," Kefria promised uselessly. And she clambers inside slowly. She gasped once as her injured hand slipped. She lay on the side of the vehicle looking in the window. "I can't see a thing. I'll have to climb down inside it." Ronica listened to her wrestle with the door, and Kefria manages to drag it open, sits on the edge of the opening for a moment before lowering herself inside. Ronica heard a sharp exclamation of horror. "I stepped on her," Kefria wailed. "Oh, my baby, my baby." There was a silence for a while. Then Kefria began to sob. "Oh, mother, she's breathing. She's alive. Malta's alive."
And that's the end of the chapter.
The storm.
A storm indeed.
Tons of things.
Yeah. Lots happening. The ball, finally. Malta being presented as a woman, meeting Rain there, Rain being dragged away because of political stuff happening.
Satrap being gross, Cirilla organizing the kidnapping of the Satrap.
Yeah, putting some power into play. Just
Burning Harbor.
Yeah. And Davod dying.
Yeah. Yeah. Rest in peace, my man.
Yeah. Also, rest in peace to the carriage driver, who is truly an innocent in all of this. He's just doing his job. And the horse. Poor horse. Yeah, no, it's kind of crazy. A lot happening. And yeah, we get to follow that up.
Thanks so much for tuning in this week. It's a lot to discuss in this one, so please let us know if you have thoughts on it. You can email us directly at isfitshappy@gmail.com, or as always, feel free to comment on any of our social media posts or DM us directly on any of those social medias as well. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Threads, and on YouTube. We're at isfitshappy on all of those.
Yeah, we look forward to hearing what you guys think.